But speaking to the young women, I think do what's right in front of you to do. And I think have eyes to see the needs in your local church. I think that you spoke to that earlier. The local church is your training ground. Yeah. It's not a short-term missions trip.
Yeah.
It's not some cool camp. It's not someday when I get to Bible school or someday when I get to Africa.
Someday
it's
is today.
Greetings and welcome to the Missions Podcast, the show that explores your hard questions on missions, theology, and practice to help goers think and thinkers go. I'm Alex Copeland, Director of Communications and Engagement with ABWE, joined once again on another exciting foray into the world of missions with Scott Dunford, pastor of Western Hills Church in San Mateo, California. And whether you're listening to us today in the Apple Podcast app or Spotify or on ABWE's YouTube channel, or if you're one of the folks who's getting this through NRB TV or the Wrath and Grace app, we're so thankful to each and every one of you. And however you've chosen to tune in today, be sure to hit the subscribe button or the bell for notifications or follow whatever your platform has. And if you're on a platform such as Apple Podcasts or Spotify that allows for a review and a rating, go ahead and drop a positive review into that feed. It helps other people to be able to discover this content and be blessed by it. So, Scott, it's good to see you today. And I feel like you're at a disadvantage today, my friend and my co-host. Of course, we love that you're here on the show, but I wish you were here in person. I wish we got to co-host this show face-to-face like it used to be.
I think ABWE needs to move to California where it's sunny and beautiful.
Right. And of course, at the time of this recording, everything's going great in California right now.
It's just fine up here. Well, I'm a long way from downtown LA. Let's just
do have a nice little slice of paradise, my friend. Yes. And but we've got things nice here in our Harrisburg, Pennsylvania studios here at the headquarters of ABWE, where I'm pleased to welcome our guest today, a friend of mine, a friend of my wife's and I, and also, full disclosure, also the wife of my employee who I introduced him recently, Caleb, your husband, to someone as my second brain. So without Caleb, I would collapse in on myself like a dying star. Some people
as would I.
Alex, how can you do so much? Well, Caleb Gorton is a big part of the reason why. But aside from that, Simona, I actually emailed you before I ever knew Caleb when we were working on getting some resources from Nine Marks.
I had forgotten about that.
In fact, your old boss, Rick Denham, has been on the show before. And it's been several years.
Before my time, yep.
Yeah, yeah. But you previously served with Nine Marks in that international resourcing division of the ministry, getting important materials on local church, ecclesiology. Onto the mission field and other important places where they need to be. But you're the author of a few works yourself, which I see you've brought.
Yes, Mothering Against Futility and Better Than We Dreamed, also a youth version of this biography on Elaine Townsend.
Elaine Townsend. So people, if they don't know that name, that's the wife of Cameron Townsend, famously the founder of Wycliffe.
Yes, Wycliffe Bible Translators, also JARS and kind of their family of logistics organizations.
Now, the Elaine Townsend book was first, and that was 2022.
Yes.
And then this year, Mothering Against Futility came out.
Correct. Actually, Better Than We Dreamed was 2017. The youth version was 2022. Okay. And then Mothering Against Futility earlier this year.
Excellent. Well, we'll dive into both. And I want to come back and talk more about the biography even in our bonus episode, which, by the way, for those of you who aren't members of our premium subscription club, if you go to missionspodcast.com/premium, for your gift of $9.99 per month, you'll get access to many member benefits, including our bonus show that we record each week after our main segment. But on to kind of the meat of the discussion, Simona, just give us a little bit more of a snapshot of who you are, your writing ministry, your current season of life. You know, you've written on missions and mothering. So give us just a little bit more of a picture of who Simona is.
Yeah. So I grew up in the Pacific Northwest. I'm a bit of a transplant here with my husband, Caleb, who grew up in the area. But really,
most people don't come to central Pennsylvania unless they have a reason.
Yes. So, yeah. Well, we enjoy you here. But I grew up with a deep passion for missions. And really, from the time I was about 8, felt very significantly called to the mission field and was pretty much just the earthquake happened in Haiti. And I remember being about 10 and being like, Mom and Dad, can I go? I want to help. And they're like, maybe in a few years.
Your parents didn't just let you go?
But there were a number of...
Were they quenching the spirit? I don't understand. You were 8. I mean, that's pretty old.
Yeah. No, they were... I think there was some letting go on their part because I think they did see the Lord's hand moving in my life. And I think they thought that I was going to the mission field for life also, and headed to Bible college really as kind of a preparation for that. Did some brief medical training, and in the Lord's providence, that's not where he's led me. I have gotten to aid in the work of missions, and that was such a privilege with the work of Nine Marks. And just using skills that I didn't really think that the Lord was going to use or even realize that I had, and laid on the altar other skills that I thought, of course, he could use. And so I think that's part of my story, too, is almost a backwards missionary story. You hear stories of people saying, Lord, anywhere but Africa, don't send me to Africa. And ha ha, he sends them to Africa.
Yeah.
And I was the opposite. I was like, Lord, anywhere but the States. And I think part of that was on my end, really thinking that he was more working more overseas than he was here. And so
kind of a romanticization of mission field.
No, I don't think it was. I think I was, the missionary biographies I was reading were pretty hardcore. Guys whose three wives all died, one at a time.
One at a time. Yes.
Adoniram Judson to the Golden Tour. And then we had missionaries in our home. And I think I really worked to dispel illusions about what it would be like. And that doesn't mean that nobody knows everything when they go to the field. But I don't think it was that. I think it was wanting to be part of something that was genuine and honest, and seeing so many facades and so much buying into what the world is here and in the West. There was a story, I believe Desiring God released it actually, about an Iranian believer and his wife who moved to California to host a podcast and a ministry that was supposed to benefit Iranian Christians. And they couldn't do it from Iran, of course. And they ended up moving back. They said, it is too hard to stay awake. And I think I was feeling that. I was feeling it's too hard to stay awake. And I was reading these stories of men and women who couldn't afford to fall asleep. You know, that just wasn't an option. Yeah. And it was like, I want that. I want to be where God is working. I want to see him working. That's what I want to spend my life on. And so there are challenges that missionaries on the field face, and there are challenges here. And I think both of them are legitimate, but that was really kind of the feeling. And anyway, so now I'm here in central Pennsylvania with my husband and three kids, and serving in my local church, teaching 5th to 7th grade Sunday school, women's Bible study, discipling my kids, teaching them to memorize scripture right along with me, and catechizing them, doing all those wonderful, exciting things. So,
excellent ministry. And I know your passion for the local church is a part of that as well, and for Caleb, your husband, as well. And
absolutely,
Scott, I know for you, you know, as a pastor, and this is often what we talk about on the show, you can't love the mission that the Lord's given us without loving the bride of Christ as well, right, Scott?
Oh, that's for sure. Yeah, and I was chuckling to myself as you were saying, you know, it's hard to stay awake. Well, maybe that's why God made you a mother, because mothers don't get to sleep, especially of young kids. So, tell me a little bit more about your work with Nine Marks. So obviously Nine Marks, we tend to think of it as being related to local church ministry, particularly in the States. And yet you were working with the international resourcing. How did that shape your understanding of the church's role in global missions?
Really, in a very deep way. I actually went to Brazil to do some photojournalism work during the Olympics over there for Ligonier, and Nine Marks wasn't on my radar. I was actually going over to, in addition to the photojournalism, to intern with a Portuguese publishing house, and that didn't end up being what I did at all. Rick Denham, who has been on the show previously, he had just been brought on as the international director for Nine Marks. He had just gone through the internship at CHPC, which is very intensive, and lots of reading, lots of thinking, lots of paper writing, and just
for those who don't know, CHPC, Capitol Hill Baptist Church, Mark Dever's church in the nation's capital. Yeah.
Thank you. And so he put me through this mini internship, and he's a very energetic, very intense person. And so we'd be over lunch and he'd be talking my ear off about Baptist church polity and the role of the local church in missions. And I had grown up Presbyterian, so had a bit of a different understanding of that. And I wouldn't say thoroughly unhealthy in how I viewed missions, but certainly not with as much of an emphasis on the local church as I think is scriptural and biblical. And so he was having me read Compelling Community and Trellis and the Vine and some of these just really key books about what it actually means to be a church, and then how the role of missions grows out of that, not kind of is a separate support for that. And so that was really changing my understanding, and then started really working for him in an unofficial capacity, came back and was brought on actually to do more admin work, and did a lot of assisting him with meetings, organizing his schedule. I ended up overseeing all of the translation projects around the world that NineMarks did. So they're active in over 60 languages, and you can go on their website, look at their international work. It's really exciting. And key to their international work really is getting to know and developing trust with international partners who are working on the ground, who are local. Yeah. And what is God already doing? How can we help you? How can we come alongside this work and not kind of this agenda and this sort of, well, you know, our step number two is, you know, it's right. much more organic than that, yeah. Which makes it a lot more time and a lot more relationship intensive.
Yeah.
But is also just such a joy to know people in Italy and Romania and Uzbekistan mm-hmm. and Syria who are all doing mm-hmm. just incredible gospel work in their roles and as a local church, as a mission organization, things like that.
Yeah, so. I know missionaries with our organization, ABWE, have used NineMarks materials mm-hmm. on the field and have digital access to all of that. And that's blessed many, many people mm-hmm. being able to lay a solid foundation. Shifting gears a little bit, though, again, you've got this missions part of your persona, and you've got motherhood, obviously, both reflected in your writing as well. So this book on the top of your stack, Mothering Against Futility, walking through the book of Ecclesiastes. So that idea of futility, I mean, Ecclesiastes, okay, we're talking about the same book that says, you know, vanity of vanity, everything is vanity, right? It's, mm-hmm. you know, depending on your perspective, it's not necessarily the most uplifting book, although I think it is, but there's some hard lessons in that book. Motherhood, of course, is all sunshine and lollipops all the time, I've been told.
Yes.
And never difficult.
Who is your wife? Yeah.
Yeah. And my wife's reading this right now, actually, it's in her stack. But talk to us, what's the connection then that you're getting at between all that the book of Ecclesiastes is teaching us about the challenges of life and finding meaning in eternal things and the fleetingness of temporal life, life mm-hmm. under the sun, and motherhood. And then this added component as well of mothering missionally, if you will. You know, you're not just mothering for the sake of raising three nice, happy adults, but you're mothering specifically with an end that they're going to be a part of what God is doing in the world.
Absolutely.
So how do those mm-hmm. things connect? What's the connective tissue between those ideas?
That's a really small, simple question.
Yeah,
Alex.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. In 5 minutes.
Yes.
Yeah.
No, honestly, this project started out of my own wrestling through the challenges of motherhood yeah. and how do I get these things that I know to be true? I'm reading them in the Word. I'm grounded theologically and I know the right answers, and yet I'm snapping at my kids and I'm frustrated at my husband and I am doing the dishes because I am so fed up that the kitchen is a wreck. And I know that's not honoring to the Lord. And so there's all these things I'm doing every day over and over and over again, laundry, dishes, disciplining children. And I'm just going to do it again tomorrow. And it's all adding up. And yeah. it feels like I'm spending my life doing stuff that doesn't matter.
Yeah.
But I know it matters because God says it matters. And that's really where Ecclesiastes comes in, because there's kind of this dual message of vanity is kind of this sense of being a fleeting. It's this vapor. It's something that passes away quickly. Mm-hmm. And so all of these things that we're doing, the dishes themselves don't matter, but God does things through the dishes, through the fact that I feed mm-hmm. people, through the fact that we're coming together as a family, mm-hmm. talking over the dinner table, the fact that my heart attitudes are coming out when I'm frustrated mm-hmm. that I don't get to do the dishes. And so really this kind of balance of mundanity and eternity that come together in Ecclesiastes in a really unique way. And so, no, it's not a hopeless book. It's filled yeah. with so much hope. And I think holding that in balance, that concept on the one hand, that what we're seeing in front of us, what we can touch and see and taste, is not all there is. And if we think there is, then Ecclesiastes has a pretty strong message of you don't get to take things with you beyond the grave. You know, all you're striving for, these things that the world loves, that doesn't end up with, you don't end up with anything at yeah. the end of the day. But on the other hand, God gives us all of these good things, all of these earthy things to enjoy and to use and to make the most of for His glory. And so as I'm mothering, we get to see the food that we put on the table as a manifestation of our joy in the Lord and our joy in redemption. And so instead of complaining and groaning about having to do all of these things, really seeing that as following the steps of Christ, where Christ made himself of no reputation. Christ didn't grasp after his rights. He was willing to lay them down. Mm. And so when I'm scraping oatmeal off the floor and grumbling in my heart that, you know, I could be doing so much more with my life, that's not what Christ did. And I think that's been a really humbling reminder for me, and humbling realization that I'm really putting myself above my Lord when I'm when I'm failing to recognize the honor and the dignity that he has given to this work of mothering.
You used a turn of phrase in there that I guess it was intentional. I don't know if you developed this more in the book or not, but you said the dishes don't matter, but what they're used for does. I love that, right? Having eaten at your house, it's true. I can attest that what's on those dishes matters. But this, you know, the laundry, okay, does the laundry matter? No, but the people wearing the clothes matter, right? Everything can be connected to something that's eternal in value. And Scott, for you, for your wife Tara, for the years that you spent on the mission field, you know, I think you could attest as much as any missionary on the field. Okay, yeah. Most of life is mundane, right? Laundry didn't stop when you were living in East Asia for those years. Give you a chance to comment on that and also follow up.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's just one of the lies, I think, of modern day ministry, is that we think the bigger is better and platform matters and all of these things, when the reality is, I think the ball tends to get moved forward inch by inch, you know, in our homes, around our tables, people that are being shown hospitality in our lives, one-on-one discussions and discipleship, obviously within the context of a local church. And while often, you know, I think the pastors like me, you know, or the conference speakers like Alex, you know, get the headlines, I've seen this even in my own ministry, just recently. You know, my wife works, it's really difficult to make a living here in California, but, you know, she hosts these meals at our home, and just watching how relationships in our church are taking massive leaps forward because of her hard work and hospitality that I get to just kind of like flit around the coattails of. But she's shining in the kitchen and around the table, and how that just builds relationships in ways that I, you know, could preach 100 messages and not be able to accomplish. So when we talk about missions, the work of missions and the women behind that, how do you think churches, not just in talking about obviously feeding and cooking, although that obviously sometimes plays a part in things, but how do you think churches can better care for and mobilize women, especially moms, on mission, whether that's at home or abroad? How do we elevate that and encourage that?
That's a great question. And I think the answer, at least from where I'm sitting, is a little bit indirect. I think when a church really elevates the ordinary means of grace, or elevates spiritual disciplines, elevates the work of Sunday school teachers, elevates the work of mothering and training children, I think that kind of, we're not necessarily being spoken to directly as mothers always in that, but I think those are all of the things that we're doing. Those are all the things that we should be doing and putting our energies towards. And so to imply, oh, there's other things out there that should be done, or to always be talking about, kind of like you were saying, the conference speakers or the celebrity preachers who the Lord does genuinely use. I think we really buy into the world's understanding of what glory is and what's honorable and what's worthy of pursuing. 1 Corinthians 1:27 says, God has chosen what is foolish to shame the wise in the world. He's chosen what's weak to shame the strong. And I think we say we agree, but then when it comes to what we're striving for and what we talk about as wonderful and amazing and what has resonated with us and who has impacted us, that's not always reflected. Mm-hmm. And so I think, similar to what you were saying, I've looked around me recently at just the opportunities that God has given me in my little corner of unglorious little central Pennsylvania. Inglorious. And
you've got a glorious little slice of country.
We do. Yeah. We do. Yeah. But, you know, I think at one point in my life, I thought I was going to be in Iraq for, you know, teaching at a classical school over there. And it's kind of that intensity of what we think God calls his people to, which is sometimes what he does. And I think there's kind of a generation of people that kind of bought into the radical, kind of the David Platt radical concept, which I think has a lot of value. I mean, we should be doing radical things for God. But I think there's a flip side. Michael Horton actually wrote his book Ordinary, kind of as a corollary to that. And I was deeply impacted by both books when they came out, and just this realization of we can sort of, everybody wants to help on this cool missions trip. Nobody wants to help mom take out the trash.
Right.
And that I think really has impacted my view of what my role is as a woman. Like what's my taking out the trash? Mm-hmm. Yeah. And what are things that people think, oh, anybody can do that. Any Christian can do that. But I have this skill. I have this gifting. And I think that's a really dangerous concept, because it enables you to kind of avoid things that God has put right in front of you. Mm-hmm. Things that you can do to be serving.
The little things, right? You won't get more
that unless can bear you're faithful
with the small things.
Right.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah, so you talk about the ordinary means of grace. If you've read, or if any of our listeners have read C.S. Lewis's Space Trilogy, the third book, the group at St. Anne's.
Yes.
You know, they know that they're in the middle of a cosmic battle. You know, they know that there's angelic and demonic forces, you know, crossing swords all around them. There's this sort of academic, almost deep state conspiracy that's conspiring with satanic forces. If you haven't read the novel, folks need to go out and get a copy of it. That Hideous Strength, I think, is one of the most important novels of the 20th century. But the group at St. Anne's, who are, with one exception, Christians, their way of engaging in that battle is frighteningly ordinary. And they're reading books, and they're discussing literature and history, and they're praying, and they're gardening, and they're just doing life together, which sounds like a very, I don't know, trendy way of put, you know, doing we're doing life together. But that's what they're doing.
In an authentic way.
In an authentic way. Yeah, yeah, that's right. And they're relevant. Yes. But it's out of that that the battle is ultimately won, without spoiling the ending of the book. But it doesn't at all look like, you know, you would think, okay, if you were in that setting, knowing what's happening in the story of the book, okay, you know, you'd be prepping, you'd be you'd be full on doomsday prepper, and justifiably so. Yeah. And so there's so much more that could be said there. But the way that we engage the mission is through ordinary things. It's not be ordinary or radical. Sometimes it's be radical by being ordinary. So maybe a question that comes out of that then is that how, with that understanding, how do you build that into your children? How do you teach them to desire to live for more, but also to appreciate the ordinary? What are some ways that you're developing your children? And specifically, as you think about that too, I have a follow-up question. I'm thinking about a type of young lady that we interact with. No, I don't have anyone particular on my mind, but it is a type of young lady who will reach out to our missions sending organization, or will sometimes approach us as elders in our church about being sent to the mission field. Maybe listening to this podcast, the type of young lady who, in her mind, the worst thing that could happen is not that she would be called to Africa. The worst thing that could happen is that she could be a stay-at-home mom in central Pennsylvania. You know what I mean? That's too ordinary.
That
she doesn't want, and she wants to go to the mission field to escape that sort of mundane, way of things going. So how do you, you know, how do you raise your kids to teach them otherwise? How do you speak to that kind of mentality in a younger person so that they can appreciate what you're sharing?
One of the things that I've been even recently really convicted about instilling in them, as I've been convicted of in my own heart, it's funny how often those two go together. Yeah. Things that you are realizing, I don't do this well, and here it is, you know, a weakness in my own children, is simply speaking in biblical terms about virtues that they should be cultivating in the same way that their mother should be cultivating, and to work with them on memorizing scripture that speaks to that. And so as I'm discipling them and working through the inevitable 30, you know, every 30 seconds there's a squabble, and not just to be like, oh, be nice to your be nice, right? But to say, no, let's recite together, what is love? You know, what are the fruits of the spirit? And identify those and say, okay, is that what was happening? And so, and even thinking in my own heart, saying mommy needs to work on that too. I get frustrated at you, and I need to cultivate that.
Yeah.
And so I think it starts with them valuing what God values.
In other words, the goal is not just you're having a global impact. The goal is actually sanctification and character development first.
That's it part of it. It is, because if I want them to be 18-year-olds that care about the work of the gospel around the world, they need to not care about what their, if their friends are liking their recent picture on Instagram. And so I think it starts with that, because my kids are very little and they don't have phones yet, and they won't for a while. Yeah. But kind of that understanding of how, what do I think is important, and what do I think is valuable? And do I care more about whether they can write all their letters properly, or do I care? I do care about that.
Yeah.
But do I care whether they are showing a genuine care and compassion to their siblings or to some their friend who just broke their leg and now can't play with them on the trampoline, right? And so I think when I'm cultivating in them the things and speaking of those things as important, that really helps them in the very early stages of that. Mm-hmm. And if you ask me that question in 10 years, then the answer might be more fully developed.
Yeah.
But speaking to the young women, I think do what's right in front of you to do. And I think have eyes to see the needs in your local church. I think that you spoke to that earlier. The local church is your training ground. Yeah. It's not a short-term missions trip.
Yeah.
It's not some cool camp. It's not someday when I get to Bible school or someday when I get to Africa.
Someday is today.
It is. And think outside the box. Be creative, right? Do some babysitting for your pastor's family. Bring somebody a meal. Like, think about ways that you can serve a church. Maybe no other young person is serving, and maybe you're equipped to do that. Maybe you can head up and help coordinate nursery schedules. Maybe you can come to church and help fold bulletins. I mean, are you wanting to do great work for Christ? We'll be tired at the end of the day because you have been serving people, and don't kind of control
tiredness
your environment.
Is not bad.
Tiredness is not bad, and expending ours. If you want to be expended for the gospel, I guarantee there are ways you can be expending yourself that you're not, and you have far more time than you realize as a single young person.
Yeah, absolutely.
So,
Scott, 30 seconds, last words.
Yeah, I mean, I just want to say to my younger self, as well as to you and to other dads out there, like, I think one of the best things we can do is not take for granted wives that are really great at what they do. But, you know, I think a lot of women we can sow seeds of discontent in their hearts by not valuing what they do and not highlighting it. And if all we're highlighting is the upfront people, then we are sowing those seeds of discontent and in our children to say that's not valuable and that's not gospel work. And so I think that's one thing I would like to tell my younger self is like, hey, really work hard to value this, pitch in and help. Don't just assume that just because your wife is really good at these things that they shouldn't be praising, that you shouldn't be participating in. Because we're sending subtle messages to our kids and our wives when we don't give honor where honor's due. That'd be my last word.
It's a good word. And I guess Elaine Townsend is kind of a model of some of these principles and concepts as well. You know, someone who is doing the wife thing in a missional context. And so I want to dive into that more with you in our bonus segment for subscribers. And so if you're in the Apple Podcast app, you can click and join the subscription directly within your podcast app. Otherwise, you can go to missionspodcast.com/premium and join. And for your generous gift of about $10 per month, you can join our group chat. You'll get a special gift. It may or may not be the branded mug sitting on the counter. I'll let you decide what you think that gift is. And of course, you'll get access to our bonus show as well. How can people get a hold of the book, Simona?
On Amazon, really anywhere books are sold, Christian Focus website, Westminster Bookstore, lots of great places.
And do you have a social media handle that people can reach out to?
I do. It's on Instagram, Simona L. Gorton.
All right. Very good. Yeah. And of course, you can reach out to us. Alex@missionspodcast.com is my email. We'd love to hear from you if you have any suggestions for future guests or topics that we should cover. Of course, the Missions Podcast is a ministry of ABWE. To learn more about taking your next steps in the Great Commission and putting your life to use, even in radical or ordinary ways, whatever that looks like, you can go to abwe.org. Until our next episode, go make disciples of all the nations.